So Rabbi Bosai, for Parshas Yisro, I have two things for you today, out of a very, very long collection of makoros from Harav Reuven Schechter. Unfortunately, I never had the pleasure of meeting him, but I'm on an email list, so I get his printing. And out of this long compilation or anthology of sources, I chose six pages, which I thought would interest us. That's number one. Number two, I also have another photocopy for you, which I didn't give out to you yet because I don't want to confuse you. And that's an article here on Parshas Yisro from the Tolna Rebbe. So we'll see what we have time for and what your interest is. And I would like to take this opportunity to, first of all, thank everyone for coming, but at the same time to request some sort of feedback as to what kind of a shiur on the parasha you would like. Meaning, I'm just going with my gut feeling, but I'm not sure what you would prefer. And also, if there's any change in time, if you're available at a different time, and this is difficult, you know, I give the shiur twice a week, once on Sundays at 11, and once on Tuesdays at 11, and I'm certainly open to other possibilities. So if you can get me that feedback, that would be great. Number one, we're going to start from the bottom, really, from one of the contemporaries. That's the Nesiv HaShalom. But most of what we're going to do today is Rishonim. The Nesiv HaShalom is in our generation, is the Slonim Rebbe. And he wants to address the concept of receiving the Torah from the perspective of the pasuk v'atem anshei kodesh tiyun li, which is going to come up later on, not in this week's parasha, but in next. This is the transition between before Matan Torah and after Matan Torah, meaning with the giving of the Torah, the acceptance of the Torah on the part of Klal Yisrael, we reach a level of not only Am Segula, which is a concept that we want to discuss, Mirtz Hashem, but also Anshei Kodesh. And we find this concept of Anshei Kodesh again in the Parash of Kashrus, in the Kashrus laws, that's in Parash of Shmini, where the Torah says, V'skadashtem v'yisem kidoshim. As a matter of fact, it's very interesting that on Leil Shavuos, many have the minhag of eating milchiks. And there are a host of explanations, possible explanations for that, one of which is that the people, when they accepted the Torah, they didn't have the possibility of eating fleshiks because of the problem of kalim. Also, there were non-kosher animals that were being used before Matan Torah and so forth and so on. So the easiest way out was to eat milchiks. And therefore, we have a minhag of commemorating that. So the transition between pre-Matan Torah and post-Matan Torah and the creation, the emergence of the nation of Israel after receiving the Torah as the Am Segula is really the concept of Kedusha, of Kedoshim Tiyu, which expresses itself in almost every dimension of the life of a Jew, certainly in the case of Macholas Asuras when he abstains from eating certain things. So the Jewish dietary laws explicitly are described by the Torah as kedoshim, v'yisem kedoshim. But it goes beyond that, because kedusha really applies to every aspect of a person's existence. And if a person lives a life of kedusha, he becomes the embodiment of Kiddush Hashem. So even in Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, when he behaves a certain way with his fellow Jew, that becomes a kedusha aspect. Certainly if he's poresh, that means he avoids going to places where he shouldn't go and doing things that he shouldn't do, even in some cases where it's technically mutter. The Ramban says that kedoshim tiyu means kadish atzmecha b'mutter lecha, even that which you're allowed to do. Otherwise, if you engage and indulge in everything that you're permitted to do, you end up, as the Ramban is famous for saying, as a novel birshus haTorah. So the Rebbe wants to say the following, that this concept of Kedusha, which is so central, so pivotal, and it's so critical to define the essence of the Jewish people as an Am Kadosh, and yet it's omitted from the counting of the Taryak. again, the one notable exception is the Ramban. The Ramban in his Pirush al Torah insists that Kedoshim Tiyu has to be included, has to be counted in the Taryak. But with the exception of the Ramban, all the other Monei HaMitzvahs, all those who counted the mitzvahs, they will omit Kedoshim Tiyu. The Rambam himself, you know that the Rambam wrote Sefer HaMitzvahs, but he has what's called the Shrashim. Is everybody familiar with that? It's a work that could take you a lifetime to study that work, just the Shrashim of the Sefer HaMitzvahs, in which the Rambam outlines in almost 20 chapters what are the rules and regulations that govern whether you count something in the Sefer HaMitzvahs as one of the mitzvahs or you don't. So one of the various Shrashim is the Rambam has something called a mitzvah klolus, which means it doesn't mandate a certain specific action in a certain specific situation, but rather it tells you how to live in a general sense. Like, for example, the Rambam Shita is that when it says "V'avadetem es Hashem Elokeichem," that you should serve Hashem, that's a mitzvah klolus. It's a general mitzvah. Everything that we do has to be the service of Hashem. So that's not specific, and it should not be counted in the Sefer HaMitzvahs. The Rambam does count it for a different reason, because he wants to derive the mitzvah of tefillah, of prayer, from Vavadatim. But otherwise, Avodah Shebelev would be a general mitzvah. It's not one of the Taryag. To the same extent, Kedoshim Tiyu is a mitzvah klolus, and therefore it's not counted in the Taryag. But the Nesiv HaShalom points out that there's something so paradoxical here, that we have 613 mitzvahs, and that aspect, that dimension which defines a Jew and the nation of Israel as a Goy Kadosh, that Kedoshim Tiyu is not counted as one of the mitzvahs. And this reminds us of the Shita of Rav Sadia Gaon, that he doesn't count the belief in God as one of the mitzvahs, right? Emunah is not counted as one of the mitzvahs, the Bahag, I should say. And the reason for that is because it's so basic, it's so fundamental, that it's not included in the mitzvahs. It's almost like an introduction to the mitzvahs. Before you're ready for mitzvahs, then you have to believe in God. If there's a commander in chief, then there are commands. If there's no belief in a commander in chief, then there's no mitzvahs. And therefore, the prerequisite or the introduction to all the mitzvahs is the belief in God, and the Bahag refuses to count that as one of the mitzvahs. All right, the Rambam does count Emunah as one of the mitzvahs, because the Rambam Shita is that Emunah is not just belief in God. Emunah means proving God's existence. Because the Rambam, as you know, was a philosopher, so he could say we should prove God's existence. You and I might have trouble proving God's existence. In any event, in order to address this question as to why Kedusha and be sanctified, which defines the nature and the essence of a Jew and the nation of Israel as a Goy Kadosh, why is that omitted in the counting of the Taryag? And he says, because it's too fundamental. It's Yesodi. It defines the essence of a Jew. And he says the following. He says, this is about, I'd say about 15 lines down in the first paragraph. He says, bless you. Kemidas kedushaso kachi yahaduso. Kechol shem es kadesh yoser, harehu yoser yehudi. He says, memela ein hakedusha kshura l'taryag mitzvahs. She'ein ze tzivui prati, ela hagdoras mahut hayehudi. He says that there are two categories. There are the mitzvahs. A Jew has a command, and he has 613 commands. And then there's something which is not a command, it's not a mitzvah, but it defines the essence of a Jew and the essence of the nation of Israel. Kedusha is something that's not just a command, but it's mahuti. Mahuti means it defines the nature of a Jew. The greater a person's kedusha is, the greater his yadus is, the greater his essence as a Jew is. So being a Jew has something that's called standard, uniform, that's the 613 mitzvahs. Insofar as I'm Jewish, I'm obligated in 613. But then being a Jew means being kadosh. And that kedusha, that sanctity, defines the essence of a Jew. And that's not something that's uniform. That's not something that's standard and objectified for every single Jew. No. Each Jew is going to, within his sphere of existence and his behavior, is going to fit into a moving kind of a pattern with regard to Kedusha. He's going to define his essence vis-a-vis Kedusha on different levels, but basically, hopefully it's going to be always on the up. And he says here that when God says, Anshei Kodesh Tiyun Li, in Parshas Mishpatim, what does Tiyun Li mean? It means Mishali, that God takes us as His nation. And why does God take us as His nation? Because of Kedusha, because you're Anshei Kodesh. So the Tiyun Li immediately follows from the Anshei Kodesh. Sha'al Yidei Zeh, that since you will become Goy Kodosh, you will manifest Kedusha, Harehe Atem Shali, to that extent, you're mine. You are my people. So therefore, Kodem Kabbalah Satorah, even before Kabbalah Satorah, Kodesh Baruch Hu reveals that you are the people of Kedusha. After we are the people of Kedusha, and that defines our essence as a nation, we emerge as a special people because of our Kedusha, then God chooses us. Now, once we are God's people, Harei and Shali, now God commands us in 613 mitzvahs. And therefore, if you take a look on the left column, the second paragraph, he says that what is the Dvar Hashem, what is God's message before Matan Torah? He tells Klal Yisrael that there will be 613 mitzvahs, there'll be first Aseres HaDibros, but even before the Aseres HaDibros, the first Dibur, the Ikar, the introduction and the premise that underlies everything in the Tariq Mitzvahs is Kadesh Atzmecha, is that the Jew has to be sanctified. If he's sanctified, he's a Jew, he's part of the chosen people, he's Anshei Kodesh, and therefore he's Tiyun Li. So in other words, if a person doesn't accept that premise, that introduction, right, that's the carpet, the floor on which you're standing, that I am a Yehudi Kadosh, that I am chosen because I am sanctified. And if the people of Israel don't declare we are the chosen nation because we are sanctified, dedicated to Kedusha, then he says, Afilum Yekayim Tayig Mitzvahs, even if we'll go ahead and he'll fulfill the 613 mitzvahs. He's nifrad me'akodesh baruch. He's not connected to God because he missed the premise or the precondition, the introduction. Rak only if atem kedoshim, if you are sanctified, and that defines you as a nation, then atem shali, you are my people, and now I will command you in the 613 mitzvahs. Al zenemar. And this is an allusion, says the Rebbe, to the aspect, the dimension of Kedusha. If we're Davuk bin Kedusha, then we have a place, we have a relationship with our Kodesh Baruch Hu, then we are chosen as the Am Skula, then we are Anshei Kodesh Tiyun Li, and now we're ready for the Targum Mitzvahs. So I see here in this piece a parallel to what the Bahag says with regard to Emunah, why we omit Emunah, belief in God, as one of the 613, because it's so fundamental. It's the introduction to the mitzvahs. Here also, the introduction to being a Jew and to being chosen as the nation of Israel is Anshei Kodesh. And therefore, once we accept Kedusha, we're dedicated to be a Goy Kadosh, then we are essentially the chosen people, the Jewish nation. Now we're ready for the Tayyig Mitzvahs. If we're missing that commitment to Kedusha, then the whole venture of Tayyig Mitzvahs is completely misnomer. It's off base. It's missing the essential introduction. Now, if you take a look at the next page, which you just have to flip to the other side, you'll see here the Meshech Chochma and the Malbim. These are two of the Achronim, both of which are trying to understand the concept of Kabbalah Satorah. And right before Kabbalah Satorah, in Parshas Yisro, Perek Yud Tes, the Pasuk records or testifies that Vayanu Kol Ha'am Yachtov, that the entire nation of Israel responded in unison. Vayomer, and they declared, Kol Asher Divra Hashem Nase. Everything that Hashem spoke, we will accept, we will do. We are committed to fulfill all the mandates of Hashem. What is the emphasis here on Kol Ha'am Yachtov? What does that mean? Why is it so necessary to speak about Yachtov? You could have said Vayanu Kol Ha'am, or Vayanu Anshei Yisrael, or Vayanu Bnei Yisrael. What's this Am Yachtov? What does that phrase mean? The Meshech Chachma, otherwise known for his work on the Rambam. Everybody? Anybody? The Or Sameach. Everybody should know the Or Sameach. Right, it's the same author. He wrote a magnum opus on Chumash called the Meshech Chachma. I don't know if you ever heard of Rav Kuperman, who passed away recently, who established a great institution for women called Mechala. He wrote three volumes of commentary on the Meshech Chachma, just on the Meshech Chachma la Torah. On the Or Sameach already, that you can fill up a shelf of books of commentaries, but on the Meshech Chachma, three volumes from Rav Kuperman. All commentary. Sometimes he has one line of the Or Sameach of the Meshech Chachma, and then the rest of the page, the small print, is the footnotes. Because there's just so much in the Meshech Chachma. But what we want to get is one little tip of the iceberg, a taste of the Meshech Chachma. And he says the following. He says that the mitzvahs of the Torah really are divided up into different segments and sectors of the populace. There are mitzvahs that apply to a Kohen and don't apply to me because I'm not a Kohen. There are mitzvahs that apply to a Levi that don't apply to a Kohen or to Yisrael. There are mitzvahs that apply to a Kohen Gadol exclusively, or to a Melech or Sanhedrin exclusively. If a person owns real estate, then he's obligated in certain mitzvahs. If he doesn't own real estate, he's not obligated. And so forth and so on. Men are obligated in certain mitzvahs, women in other mitzvahs. So then in that sense, it's really not accurate, l'chora, to say that we were commanded in 613. There's no one who could say that he's commanded in all 613. But the answer is written here in this pasuk, Kol Ha'am Yachtov. Meaning that the Kabbalah of the Torah is not an individual Kabbalah. It's not that Reuven accepts the Torah, Shimon accepts the Torah, Levi accepts the Torah, but Chalal Yisrael, there's an entity, an indivisible entity called Yachtov, called the entire nation of Israel. And here, with the Yachtov, we have the Kiyum, the implementation of how many mandates? 613. All 613. Kol Yisrael Arevim Zolas. That means that we all are mutually responsible and we form one indivisible entity which is called Kol Ha'am Yachtov. And it's fascinating because the Meshech Chachma adds five words here which I would underline, and he says B'kiyumam Kulam Mekablim Schar. No, that's four words. I said five. I added an extra word of my own. Okay, so let's... I have here somewhere on my desk... Oh, here it is. A red pen. This is... this needs red ink. Okay. We're learning the Sugya of Melechus Kosev and Shabbos, so the different inks, the different colors of ink. Anyway, here he says, Ubekiyumam Kulam Mekablim Schar. You know, in psychological terms, we would say there's a group effort. You know, today, as you know better than I do, in counseling, in psychology, what they do is they're shifting the emphasis from one-on-one therapy to group therapy. Right? So you have a group of people that get together and they talk it out, you know, with the manche, with the guidance of some psychologist or social worker, meaning they all have more or less the same issue. For example, in marriage therapy, there's group sessions. You know, this has become very popular. Now, the underlying concept of a group session is that I help you and you help me. You know, you have your issues, I have my issues, but there's a certain commonality, and I give you chizik, you give me chizik. We all support each other. That mutual support is the essence and the glory of a group effort. And the Meshech Chachma claims that in Torah and in mitzvahs, there's something called a group effort. So even though you're a Kohen and I'm not a Kohen, but I give you support, and even though I have certain mitzvahs that you don't have, you give me support, and together we work as an entity, as an indivisible team, which is called Yachtov, Om Yachtov, which is Knesset Yisrael. You know, the Bali Kabbalah, the mystics say that Knesset Yisrael is one neshama. It's really one neshama that enters into many different gufos, but it's all one neshama. And that neshama is the same neshama as the neshama of the Torah itself. And that's why Knesset Yisrael is a separate personality, is a separate entity, is like the Torah itself. But the Meshech Chachma says that b'kiyumam, even though befall in actuality, you know, there are certain members of Klal Yisrael that will fulfill certain mitzvahs, and other members of Klal Yisrael will not fulfill those mitzvahs. Yet, it's considered kulam that they all fulfill the mitzvah as one entity, as one body, and therefore kulam mekablim schar. Everyone will get rewarded for all 613 mitzvahs because we're operating and behaving as a kulam yachdov, as one entity. And therefore, David, when we makabel the Torah, it was vayanu kulam yachdov, nasa v'nishma.
I just imagine that Avishal is a spiritual thing. Whereas the other things is more practical.
Could be right that what the Meshech Chachma has in mind is something spiritual. That's always a good, you know, that's my fallback. You know, I call it, you know, if I have no choice, it's a good fallback position. But I wanted to even go a little further, that maybe we could understand the Meshech Chachma on a psychological level, you know, without having to go into metaphysics and mysticism. But just to say that in the physical universe, we all work together. I give you chizuk, you give me chizuk, and as a group, we fulfill the Torah. And therefore, he says, now again, I don't know if he's presenting this in a psychological vein or in a metaphysical, mystical vein. He says, "Kol ha'uma Yisraelis hu adam echad." That when we receive the Torah, we received it as one person. All of Klal Yisrael intertwined, integrated into one person. And that's Vayichan, correct. Vayichan and Vayanu. You see, the Vayichan is the introduction, and the actual Kabbalah Sator is really here in this Pasuk, because it says Vayomer Kol Asher Dibra Hashem Nase. And here the Pasuk says Vayanu Kol Ha'am Yachtov. Again, if I have the Torah left out the word Yachtov, I'm not sure if we would have enough, you know, of a justification.
You should have actually said Vayan Kol Ha'am, shouldn't it, in a way?
I think the point of Vayanu is that each and every one of us is accepting the Torah not just for myself, but for Yachtov. And that's what Kol Yisrael HaRevim Zeh L'Zeh is, right? We have a principle called Yotza Motzi, meaning if I'm a Bar Chiyuva and you're a Bar Chiyuva, we share the same obligation, I could be Motzi you. But if I don't have that obligation, I can't be Motzi you. So the question is, let's say for example, I already fulfilled my mitzvah. The principle is Yotza Motzi, I can still be Motzi you in the mitzvah, even though I already fulfilled my personal obligation. And the answer to that is, Kol Yisrael HaRevim means that I haven't fulfilled my obligation. My obligation is still outstanding until I make sure that you fulfill your obligation. So it's not that I'm a kabbal, I have to be makabel the Torah as a yachid as far as my commitment, but my commitment is vis-a-vis the community, vis-a-vis the yachdov. I am committed to make sure that you fulfill the mitzvah. So it's very interesting. A person could say, like, you know, today we live in a time of kiruv. You know, we do a lot of kiruv. So somebody could say, well, that's not for me. I remember I once sat in a college class, and this was a summer school, and I was trying to rack up credits so I could have more time for learning during the year. So I went to Brooklyn College. Again, I don't know if anybody here, Mitch, you would know about Brooklyn College. Yeah, so there was a girl in the class who came from some hick town, and she saw that I was from, you know, she said to me, I'm very curious about Judaism. You know, I'd like to sit down with someone and learn. I was born Jewish. So I remember I felt a little uncomfortable. You know, I was single, and this was a single girl. I didn't feel comfortable. So I went over to a married woman in the class, a very famous Rebbetzin, whose husband is an outstanding Talmud Chacham. And she's wearing a sheitel and everything else. And I said to her, because her husband and I did a lot of learning together, I said to her, this girl is curious about Judaism. I was absolutely shocked at her response. Totally shocked. She said to me, that's full of Avich.
What?
that's full of Lubavitch. Meaning, I'm not a Lubavitch. If I'm not a Lubavitcher, I'm Potter. So I would love, you know, if I could dig her up, you know, I would send her this, the copy of this Meshech Chochma, because the Meshech Chochma says that the Kabbalah Satorah and the commitment was not just for myself, but for everyone. And again, you know, the Meshech Chochma lived in Dvinsk, which there were many Chabad Hasidim in Dvinsk, but he was not the Rav of the Lubavitcher Hasidim in Dvinsk. He was a Rav of the Litvaks in Dvinsk. Does anybody know who the Rav of the Lubavitcher Hasidim was in Dvinsk at the same time as the Arsameach? Did you ever hear the Rogachover? Yeah. The Rogachover actually gave smicha to the Rebbe, you know, the Rebbe who just passed away a few years ago, right? It's more than a few years ago already. Time flies. But the Meshech Chochma is pointing out that, you know, my commitment to mitzvahs is not my personal Kabbalah Satorah. It's a Kabbalah Satorah on behalf of the entire tzibur. And he reiterates this concept at the end of the paragraph. He says that Kol Asher Dibra Hashem Nasa V'Nishma, and he says Yesh Shenishma Shenilmad V'Novin Pnimiusam V'Choseim V'Chukoseihem. He says it's not enough to say Nasa, that we'll implement the mitzvahs, but we also need the Nishma. The Nishma, he says, means to understand the mitzvahs, to delve into each mitzvah, and to see its meaning, and its goal, and its laws, and its statutes. Here, because the Nasa and Nishma is going to come a little bit later on in Parshas Mishpatim, but here, in Parshas Yisro, the emphasis is on the Nasa. Why? Because we're talking about the Asiyah, the implementation of those mandates, the 613, and here I have to accept upon myself a commitment that I am part of the Am Yachtov, of Kulam Yachtov, as far as the Asiyah is concerned. When it comes to learning the halachas and understanding them, each person is sort of on his own. Obviously there's a mitzvah to teach Torah, but that's my commitment to learn the Torah and on a deeper level, understand its nuances and its laws. That's a personal experience. But when it comes to Asiyah, to Nasa, my commitment is not vis-a-vis myself exclusively, but rather vis-a-vis all my fellow Jews. And that's called Ha'am Yachtov. The Malbim focuses on a different dimension of Kabbalah Satorah. The pasuk says right before Kabbalah Satorah in Parshas Yisro, "V'yisem lisgula mikol ha'amim." You are somehow a different nation, unique amongst the nations of the world.
A peculiar treasure.
Excellent. And now the Malbim wants to know. We've spoken before about the fact, and we made a big deal about it in our discussion here in the Nesivos Hasholem, that the people of Israel are singularly dedicated to Kedusha. But here it says, Am Sgula. And he wants to understand the difference between Am Sgula and Am Kadosh. He says the following, Shesgula hi dover shechoshuv mitzad ha-bechira. Dover sheyokar v'enei balov. Chein v'yofi. In other words, if I have a special attraction, something is beloved to me, and I cherish it, then I put it into a special place. It has a certain chain, a certain grace, a yofi, a beauty that attracts me. And yosim also v'yotzim yuchad, I find myself a treasure chest, you know, some sort of weird place where I'll lock it up and designate it for myself. No one should go near it. And that's called Sgula. He says, "Kamo sgulas malachim v'medinos," that every king of every nation has an otsar. He has a special place where he puts away, you know, heirlooms or historical documents or objects, you know, that have certain significance to the nation. That's called an otsar. That's called sgula. V'nikru am sgula. Why are we, the people of Israel, called the am sgula? Mitzad shebachar Hashem bahem. And here's the key, this is the punchline. Af she'enam avdei Hashem. Now, Goy Kadosh means that we implement all the commands, all the mitzvahs. We sanctify ourselves. But now there's a separate, independent category called Am Sgula. V'yisem liskula mikol amim. What's the import and the significance of being an Am Sgula? And he says it's a tremendous nafkamina. a difference that's so fundamental that it means that the people of Israel are chosen by Hashem, and they are, you know, they are put aside, you know, locked in that treasury, even if they are not a Goy Kadosh. In other words, during certain periods of time, Baruch Hashem, we manifest Kedusha, and you can call us an Am Kadosh because we are Miskadesh, and we are Misromim. You know, we elevate ourselves in a very lofty way, and we call that Am Kadosh Atem Hashem Elokecha. But sometimes, unfortunately, in Jewish history, we don't live up to that command, that level of Am Kadosh. We don't have the Mila of Kedusha. But nevertheless, we still remain our, we still retain our status as what? As Am Segula. Because Hashem chose us, and the choice, and here you have to underline the last four words, is below Shum Hachana Mitzidam. Those are the key four words here in this Malbim. A very, very, shall I say, radical approach of the Malbim. We usually assume that if you want to be chosen by someone, you have to prepare yourself. You know, you have to come with credentials. And we would assume that Avraham Avinu, for example, came with credentials. After all, he was the monotheist in a world of idolatry. He was dedicated to chesed. He was the knight of faith. He was the person who lived up to the Akedah, and so forth and so on, the Eser Nisyonos. So he prepared himself, and therefore he was chosen. No, says the Malbim, that's wrong pshat. If you're going to interpret that the reason why Avraham Avinu and the people, that the descendants of Avraham Avinu were chosen by Hashem because of the Hachana Mitzidam, because they prepared, meaning they were dedicated, then you're making a grave error, because then what do we say in football, a fumble. Have you ever heard of a fumble? You know, if we fumble the ball, then we no longer deserve to be the chosen nation, because our chosenness is contingent. It's based on the hachana, what we improved ourselves, and we prepared ourselves, and we made ourselves superior to the other nations. That's why we were chosen. No, says the Malden. If you understand that, then you're going to come to some really difficult conclusions, which Lahavdil Elf Avdos, the Christian theologians, came to these conclusions, that we were rejected. We're no longer the Am Kadosh, and therefore we're no longer the Am Segula. No, there's a separate independent category called Am Segula. And the meaning and the significance of Am Segula is that Hashem chose us. And once Hashem chose us, we are Yokar B'Einov, we have a certain Chen and a Yofi B'Eri Hashem, V'Yosim also B'Otzer M'Yuchad, and this is a relationship that is absolutely unconditional. It's eternal, and it is not contingent upon our hachana. And I just want to add that way before the Malbim, you know, the Malbim lived in the 19th century, but many centuries before him, about four centuries before him, the Maral Miprag is famous for saying, and I think I may have mentioned it to you in the past, the Mefarshim will ask, in the case of Noach, before Hashem appears to Noach, it says, "V'noach ish tzaddik haya tamim haya b'doroso." In the case of Avraham Avinu, garnished. You know, there's a story at the end of Parshas Noach about Charan, that he picks up his children, packs out, and they go to Charan, and this and that. Avraham is mentioned there, but the very next pasuk says, "Vayom Hashem Avraham lech lecha me'aretzcha me'ladetcha." Where's the introduction? So the Maral says, just the opposite. The Torah deliberately omits the introduction. Had it said like it said in the case of Noach, that Avraham Avinu was an Ish Tzadik, Tomim Haya, blah, 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 then you would have come to the mistaken conclusion, says the Maral Miprag, that the choice of Avraham Avinu was contingent and it was a result of his Tzidkus. That's true in the case of Noach. And Noach fumbled the ball, as we would say later on. And the Bnei Noach fumbled the ball big time. But in the case of Avraham Avinu, that's a choice based on the existential av of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the choice of a segula relationship. I always like to say that there's another entity on the face of the earth that's called segula, besides the nation of Israel. And that's Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael is called the nation of segula. And why is that so? You know the famous story, apparently it's a true story, I think, about Rothschild, that after he died, I think the president of France was De Gaulle, Charles De Gaulle, if I'm not mistaken, and Rothschild had left a tzava that after his death he should be interred in Eretz Yisrael, like Yaakov Avinu, or like Yosef. And Charles de Gaulle couldn't understand. You know, the French are very nationalistic, and you know, a good Frenchman. So you know, Rothschild was a good Frenchman. How could he leave a legacy that should be buried in the land of Israel? But what the French don't understand is the concept of Eretz Gula. You know, our relationship to Eretz Canaan, Eretz Yisrael, is not something that you can explain and rationalize with a write a paper for a university course and give an intellectual explanation point by point why it makes sense that we love the land of Israel. It's pragmatic. It's the land of milk and honey. Forget about all that. That's not even on the radar screen. Eretz Yisrael is the Eretz HaSgula. This is the chosen area, the chosen land of the universe. And we as the chosen people of Am Sgula have a relationship to the Eretz Sgula that's above and beyond any sort of logical, pragmatic explanation.
Would you say that Abraham become Am Sgula because of what he did? Because he accepted God, but after that,
No, I would say the following, that as soon as you answer the question, why did God choose Avram, you're in deep trouble.
That's right.
Because once you give an answer, then it becomes contingent. You know that many Jewish philosophers have asked the question, why did God create the world? And, you know, there's something called chesed, you know, that Hashem is chesed, and he had to create, you know, he's a native, and he had to create the world. It is. Others say that God is a melech, and ain't melech below Am. There are various philosophical approaches. But my Rebbe used to always say, in the name of his grandfather, Reb Chaim Brisker, that Reb Chaim said, none of those answers are correct. Hashem created the world because he wanted to create the world. That's called the Ratzon of Hashem. There is never an answer to the question of Ratzon Hashem. The will of God is above any explanation. That is God's will. So I say the same thing with regard to God's choice of Klal Yisrael, of Avraham Avinu and the people of Israel as the Am Sgula. There's never going to be an answer to the question of why God chose us. You can say this, you can say that. Fine, it's good for drushes. But at the end of the day, it's the will of God. And the will of God is an eternal, infinite will that cannot be explicated, and it's not contingent, and it's infinitely all-involved. Let's go on to the Abarbanel, if you will, which is the third page that you have, which is the middle of the three pages in your booklet. Am I right? Or maybe I'm wrong. One second, did I get that right? Because I have the original, so I don't have... It should say number 16 on the bottom?
Yeah.
Okay, great, excellent. You know, the Abarbanel is very much influenced by the earlier Rishonim. The Abarbanel is kind of in that transition period. He's probably the first of the Achronim in that period of time. And he's very curious, as other Mefarshim before him are, about the question of the Aseres HaDibros. Meaning, we speak about Kabbalah Satorah at Maimon Har Sinai, and yet how many commands were given at Maimon Har Sinai? 10. I mean, the magic number is 10.
That's not true.
Oh. So who actually undermines this approach and tells us we're making a mistake if we think that there are only 10? Do you remember? I don't know. If somebody could open up Rashi for me, I just didn't get a chance to do that. But Rashi in his Pirush al Torah...
He's 14.
Oh, okay. So, Michael, call it 14. It's not going to help you. Okay? What do I mean? Rashi already tells us that it's 613. Correct? And this is critical for Rashi, because Rashi doesn't believe that we can accept the Torah by accepting X number of mitzvahs out of Taryak. Kabbalah HaTorah has to be all-inclusive, without exception. So if you have the Rashi, it should be the last pasuk before the Aseres HaDibros, I think. See if you can find it. If not, I'll find it for you here.
20 letters in
the Yesod. Oh, that's cool. Plus the seven mitzvahs for Bnei Noach, right?
Well, actually, it's the seven mitzvahs for the Rabbanim.
The seven mitzvahs for the Rabbanim. But Rashi says something much more fundamental and far-reaching, if I could. You have it? Okay, great. Rashi says that... Oh, I'm sorry. So... Actually, the Rashi is not here. I think the Rashi is here, maybe. The Rashi is actually in Parshas Mishpatim, in Perek Chav Dalet, and I believe it's Pasuk Yud Beis. Let's see if I can find that. Yeah. You see, it's very interesting. The Torah there calls the Luchos HaEven. Now, what was inscribed on the Luchos HaEven, Rabbosai? Aseres HaDibros, right? And yet the Torah calls it HaTorah VeHaMitzvah. And the word HaMitzvah is a reference to all the mitzvahs. That's how Rashi learns it. So Rashi says the following, Kol Shesh Meos V'Shlosh Esrei Mitzvahs B'Chlal Aseres HaDibros HaEven. Again, do you have the blue Chumashim? Oh, great. So it's on page 188. And you look for the Rashi in Pasuk Yud Beis. And then he writes, Rabbeinu Sa'adya Pirish Bazharo Sheyisei L'chol Dibru Diru Mitzvahs HaTluyas Bo. Now, some have the midig of reading the Azharas of Rabbeinu Sajigon on the day of Shavuos, on the night of Shavuos. Because what Rabbeinu Sajigon does is, he goes through each one of the Aseres HaDibros, and he classifies under each one the entire list of mitzvahs that you derive or subsume under that Dibra, until he finally covers all 613. I would not recommend reading the Azharas of Rav Sajigon. We don't understand what he's talking about. It's beyond our comprehension. But the concept we have to understand, because Rashi holds that at the time of Kabbalah Sator, there was a Gerus, in which Klal Yisrael entered into Kedushas Yisrael by accepting Tariq Mitzvahs, and therefore Rashi has no choice but to accept Rav Sajigon, that the ten Dibros include all the 613. So when you accept the 10, then ipso facto you're accepting all 613. And the Abarbanel is very much influenced by this. And he says, if you take a look in line 5, he says that Ein Safek, there's no doubt, Shekulam Yuchlu B'dibur Anochi Hashem. He says the Torah commands us in not only the belief in God, but also to appreciate God and love God. And God is the one who took us out of Mitzrayim. And he says that included in this mitzvah of Asher Tzeisicha Meretz Mitzrayim are all the mitzvahs of Pesach and Matzah, the Isur Chametz, sitting in a sukkah, Tefillin, Mezuzah. There's so many mitzvahs that are Zechel Yetzias Mitzrayim. He adds Bechor and Meiser and Truma and Challah. All of this is included under the first of the Aseres HaDibros, Anochi Hashem Elokecha. And he includes Avas Hashem and Yiras Hashem. It's all included under Anochi Hashem Elokecha. And then he says that this is all a remez on the mitzvos, Elokios, Hamit Yachzos, Elov Yizbarach. Rabos lo pirish osam. You know, Klal Yisrael could not stand there and accept the Torah by, you know, if Hashem would have to go through all the myriad of mitzvahs that are included, and therefore he gave us a klal, a general rule, a general law, so to speak. And then he goes on to lo yielachal kimach Elohim achirim, which is the second of the Aseres HaDibros, that includes within it molech, ovidoni, Kishuf, all of Avodah Zarah, and the prohibition against giving prophecy in the name of other gods or to influence others to believe in other gods, etc., etc. He goes through a whole list. And then, if you want to fast forward to the Dibur of Lotisa, that we're not allowed to say God's name in vain, he says included under that command is all the laws of Shvuos, Nedarim, Charamim, Hakdeshos, Nazir, and the Isur of being Mevarech as Hashem, all of this is included in Lotisa. Lotisa means you have to be careful about what comes out of your mouth. And if you mention the name of God in a way that's in vain, that's a terrible misuse of the power of speech. Then he goes to Zochres Yom HaShabbos L'Kadsha, which he says includes in it all of Moadim, you know, it's Kedushas HaZman, what we call the sanctity of time, all the korbanos that have to be brought because of the sanctity of the time. He mentions the korban of Rosh Chodesh. Then he goes on to the tzivui of Kaveis Avicha, that you have to respect your parents, and he says included in that is the Yisra HaKon Klola, Yira and Eima Mipneim. He goes on to say that the Amuna Bekabola Sarishonim Bepirish HaToru Mitzvoseha, that because the Torah doesn't really specify exactly what's included in Kibud Av Va'Em, we must believe in the Rishonim, meaning the Chachmei HaTalmud, the Chachmei HaMesorah, who will interpret the mitzvahs. And that's also included in this command. Then he has Lo Tirtzach, which is the source or the root of all mishpatim, of all laws bein anam lechaveru, meaning all the ethical statutes of the Torah, the dinim of not hitting another person, etc. It's all included under Lo Tirtzach. Lo Sinaf includes all the laws of arayos and forbidden relationships, having Mishkav Zohar or Mishkav Behema, the law of Shivcha Harufa, all this is included in Lo Sinov. Then he has Lo Signov, which includes in it all the laws of ownership and all the mitzvahs that apply to Midos, Mishkolos, the mitzvahs that apply to Shechenim, how to divide up Karka, not to overcharge or underpay, not to steal, not to take usury, to pay your workers on time. All this is included under Lo Signo. Then he has Lo Sachmod, which includes Sinas Chinam, how to treat an Almana, a Ger, and a Yosam. Everything's included in this. And then he writes at the end of this whole presentation that Kol Mitzvos Acheros Shenemar B'Derech Klal B'Chlal HaDvarim Ha'il, that all the other mitzvahs are included in a more general sense in the ten Dibros. Now, Rabosa, I have a problem with this because you're not allowed to eat certain things. Where does that fit in? So he says it fits into Lo Sachmod. That's a little bit of a stretch because Lo Sachmod means that I envy or covet your possessions. That has nothing to do with Nevelus and Trefus. You're not allowed to eat Nevelus and Trefus. I'm not eating Nevelus and Trefus. I don't know why that comes under Lo Sachmod. That's one thing that I find very difficult. But there are many examples of mitzvahs which are not related to Kedushas HaZman, and they're not related to Bein Odom L'Chavero, and it's going to be very hard to subsume them under the Aseres HaDibros. But the Abarbanel has no, you know, he's influenced by Rav Sajagon, who came way before him, and he doesn't flinch about this. He's absolutely convinced, and he did a pretty good job, that you could subsume all of the 613 in the Aseres HaDibros. So if you ask yourself the question, what is so significant about the Aseres HaDibros, the answer is because those are roots or overarching principles that include within them all of the 613. And here I want you to go on to the next page, called Kaf Aleim Har Kigigis. Yeah.
The problem is the word Ten Commandments is wrong. It's not Ten Commandments, it's Ten Sayings.
I would say Ten Principles.
Okay, principles.
Yeah.
And then you've got the same Ikronot that the rabbis, David HaMelech, put us at dealing with only 13 principles, and they tried to break it down, and eventually there was some even.
Yeah, they were at the end of Marcus, you mean.
That was it. So, and this is a similar kind of thing.
Very similar. But it means that, according to Rav Sajagon, if you were to test a bolus gayer, meaning a non-Jew comes for gayrus, and you want to give him a sampling and see if he accepts it, then Aseres HaDibros would be the way to go. Because if he accepts the Aseres HaDibros, then willy-nilly, by definition, ipso facto, he's accepted all the 613. The only question is, maybe he doesn't understand the 613. Okay. Now we have the concept of Betachtis Hahar, that the Jewish people accepted the Torah Betachtis Hahar, underneath the mountain. Azoy State, that's what the Pasuk says. So Rashi says, the famous Rashi, in the name of the Medrash, Nitlash Hahar Bimkomo V'Kofa Aleim Kigigis. So the Maharalmi Prague tries to understand the significance of this concept called Kofa Aleim Har Kigigis. He offers two alternative approaches. One, in his Pirush al Rashi al Torah, which is called the Gurari. Another, in his one of his magnificent works called the Teferes Yisra. In the Gur Aryeh, in his commentary on Rashi al Torah, he says the following. This is a very, very profound idea, and I'm not sure I could do justice to it, but I'll give it a shot. He says that, and I think he anticipated a movement in, I don't want to even call it a movement in Judaism, that he anticipated by 500 years. I don't know if you've ever heard of voluntaristic Judaism. Did you ever hear that?
No.
Okay, it's good that you never heard of it, but there's some outstanding Jewish scholar who wrote a book to try to prove that the covenant between Israel and the Jewish people is a matter of voluntary acceptance. That in any generation we have the right to decide whether we want to be part of the covenant or we don't want to be part of the covenant. Okay, I don't want to mention the man's name, because I actually like him as a person. He's like, he's a Holocaust survivor, and he's the sweetest guy you'd ever meet. And he himself observes the 613 mitzvahs, even though he identifies with a different movement in Judaism, not what we call Orthodox Judaism. But according to Maharalmi Prague, anticipating what would come 500 years later, he interprets that Kof Aleim Har Kegigis is Mamash Lafukis, is to disprove this theory. Lomar ki Torah hi hechrechit lekabla. It's not a question of voluntary acceptance. You decide whether you want in or you don't want in. According to Maharalmi Prague, this was demonstrated as something that was compelled upon us by the Kof Aleim Har Kegigis. Im lo haya osezeh, if there wasn't this Kof Aleim Har Kegigis, says the Maral, hayu omrim, people would have claimed HaTorah eina hechreches rak berotzon kiblu aleim vim lo kiblu lo yutzrichim. You know, it's something nice, it's a good thing, and you know, we may recommend accepting the Torah, but you know, the universe could go on, nobody's going to die if you don't accept the Torah. And therefore, Kof Aleim Har Kegigis tells us that Nesinas HaTorah is absolutely Mukhrach. Mukhrach means it must be. And as I said before, Rabbi Osai, this Maharalmi Prague requires, you'd have to write a whole treatise in philosophy to really understand this Maharal on a deeper level. But perhaps, on a more simple level, we have the Maharal in the Teferis Yisrael. And he says the following. There's a concept called Lo Sia Leisha Lo Yuchal Leshalcha Kol Yomav. And again, upon my English here, which is not so nice here, but if, I don't know how to say it in a nice way, but if a man rapes a woman, then he's got to marry her. Again, she can reject him, but if she says okay, then he has to marry her. Not only does he have to marry her, it's one of the few cases in halacha, what we call it, a Catholic marriage, lahavdil, that he's not allowed to divorce her. And he says the same thing happens at Har Sinai. There's a marriage relationship which cannot be divorced. It cannot be broken up. You know, you see how much he was influenced by the other theologies that said about the Jewish people that, you know, we got a bill of divorce, but we never got a bill of divorce. And not only that, we can never get a bill of divorce. Why? Because Hare Yisrael Anu Saso Shal HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We were compelled by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because Kof Aleim Har Kegigis. And once we were compelled to enter into the covenant, then with regard to Anu Saso, the Torah says, Lo Yuchal L'Shalcha Kol Yomav. Kaviyachol, God Himself is bound, if you could use that term. I mean, it sounds like apikorsis to say that God is bound, but this is the way the Maharal understands it. God is bound. He can no longer get out of this marriage. He cannot throw a get in our face. Why? Because we are the getter anusaso. It's a chibur, it's a connection between us and God that's hechrechi, meaning it's metaphysically existential, it's part of the universe, and it's essential to the universe. It can never be undone. And now we get to your third page. Do you have your third page? It should say on the bottom, page 22, and this is a beautiful Abarbanel. Now, in order to appreciate the Abarbanel, we have to know one thing, and that is, was Moshe Rabbeinu the emissary, the agent to bring us the Aseres HaDibros, or do we hear it directly from God? What was the original plan? That we would hear it directly from God. And at the end, for whatever reason, we couldn't tolerate it, and therefore, fine. So the Abarbanel wants to know, why is it that we had to hear it directly from God? You don't have page 21, right? Okay, I ran out of pages here to photocopy, but just I want to tell you that 21 is the Kuzari, Rabbi Yudal Levi. That you don't have a photocopy, I'll just tell you in 2 minutes what the Kuzari is machadish here. Why does God identify Himself at the beginning of the Aseres HaDibros as Asher Otzeisicho Meretz Mitzrayim rather than Asher Barasi Es HaOlam, that I created the world? And He says the following. He says that our Emuna is based on the fact that we had personally experienced God at the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim. You know, go prove to me that God created the world. You know, if I'm a deep philosopher, I'll accept your proof. I'll analyze your proof. But a personal experience of Bria Sa'olam, that's impossible. But in the case of Asher Otzeisicho Meretz Mitzrayim, that's something that the Jewish nation experienced personally, and they passed it down through the tradition, transmitted it to their children. And he says that Pasach Elokim Dvarav El Yisrael Anochi Hashem Elkecha Shetzisicha Meretz Mitzrayim Lo Amar Ani Borei HaOlam, I created the world Ubarachem and I created you. Because what his barer etzlam hamayved ahu bebrias, excuse me, beros einam, because they themselves personally witnessed the Yetzias Mitzrayim, al kein hakabola nimsheches, something that you saw with your own eyes, you transmit to others and to your children, your grandchildren. So that was page 21. I didn't have enough paper in the machine to photocopy all that. But on page 22, the Abarbanel offers 5 answers to the question, 5 fundamental principles as to why the people of Israel had to hear the Aseres HaDibros, the voice of God, directly from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And he says, number one, which is the second paragraph on your page, and he quotes the Ibn Ezra, that there were those amongst the Jewish people who didn't believe in Nevuah. They questioned the concept of prophecy that God communicates to man, and therefore it was critical that they would personally experience Nevuah, and therefore they would have to admit and accept the existence of Nevuah. Number two, Atachlus Hasheni, is that something has to enter and penetrate into the hearts of Israel in such a way that it will remain lanetzach for all eternity, and therefore it's critical sheyishmu kula mipi agvura besinai, they should hear directly the voice of God. And the pasuk says ba'avur yishma am bedabri imach v'gam b'chaya minu olam, that the Jewish people would recognize the Torah as the true Torah, and that they would be able to pass that tradition on to their children. Hatachlus Hashlishis, he gives a third answer to why it was critical that they hear directly the voice of God. Lahara, because there was a belief, he says, Shetov Adam Yuchan Usholim B'midos V'Dovkein Aval Kol Asher Chofetz Yaseh Shenavua Be'emes Hi Dvar Nisi Nimtzeis Bepela. He says that it was very critical that they understood the miraculous nature of this event, and by personally hearing the voice of God, they would appreciate that this was a metaphysical, or shall we say, a supernatural event. We have to go over that if we had time, but we don't have time. And then if you turn to the last page that you have, he has Hatachlis HaRavius, he says the fourth goal is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to give Klal Yisrael an elevating experience that would, in a sense, inspire them and uplift them and therefore make them into an Am Segula. And by personally receiving this Nevuah, it had a cathartic impact on Klal Yisrael, inspiring them, as it were, and uplifting them to the level of Nevuah. And finally, the fifth and last purpose of hearing it is Kevon Shekodesh Baruch Hu Ledaber Ima Advarim Ha'ele Kedei Sheyiknu Mishmias Kolo Midas Hayira, that by hearing the voice of God directly, they would be in a state of they would be awestruck. Is there a word in English, awestruck?
Yeah?
Awestruck. That's called Midas Hayira. Vitale Aleim Emos of Afachad Migdulas Hashem. They would be in a state of awe over the greatness of God, the Yecholto, and His power, the Otzem Gvuroso, and that is something that they would pass down and transmit through the generations, that impact. So basically, the thesis of the Abar Benel, I think if we wanted to integrate all five into one, is that the experience of hearing the voice of God directly through no intermediary was meant to change and alter, transform the people of Israel into people of Nevuah, people of Emunah, people who would appreciate miracles, people who would be awestruck and would be able to transmit that Emunah and that faith to the generations for all eternity. Okay? Any questions before we end?
Because they did hear the first two commandments.
Say it again?
They heard the first two.
Right.
Which is, wasn't that...
That's the next part of the Abar Benel is what happened exactly after the second Dibra. But my purpose today was only to emphasize that the original plan, the divine scheme of things, or the ideal situation, would have been to hear the Aseret HaDibros directly from the voice of Hashem without any intermediary. And you could add the Abar Benel as an attachment to the Kuzari, again, who was centuries and centuries before the Abar Benel, that Rav Yehuda Halevi says that why is it necessary that Hashem identify Himself as the God who took them out of Mitzrayim? Because that creates that personal relationship. You know, God created the universe, but you know, that doesn't speak to me. What speaks to me is that God took me out of Mitzrayim. Hotzeisicha me'eretz Mitzrayim. And that's something that would solidify their emunah, their faith in God. And if you now jump forward to the Abar Benel, with the bridge that connects the two, the Abar Benel says that if the purpose of the Maimon Har Sinai was emunah, you know, to penetrate the emunah into their souls and their hearts and facilitate their ability to transmit that Amunah, then we can begin to appreciate why, in the ideal plan, they were meant to hear the Aseret HaDibros directly from the voice of Hashem. So I prepared for you another hour, which we won't get to, I don't think today, but let me know if you have any time, and we can study this beautiful piece of the Tolna Rebbe on the whole concept of Hagbel Asa'om and Ahar, why the people had to be separated from the mountain at the time of Matan Torah. So that we'll have to leave for another time. Okay, then. So again, I reiterate what I said at the beginning of the class, that I'm eager to hear what kind of a shir on Parsha you would like, and so that I can gear it towards your, you know, your enjoyment, so it's your preference. And you could always email me if you want to at azariaberzon@gmail.com. Okay, then? But it's A-Z-A-R-Y-A or A-Z-A-R-Y-A without an H. A lot of people add an H at the end of my name, Azaria, but my father gave me the name Azari without an H. So that's what I have. So I, so it's Kabbalah's Torah without Ha Torah. So we left out the hay of Ha Torah. You know,
there's no hay at the end of your name?
Azaria? There is, but in English it's Azaria, an A instead of an A-H. You know, a lot of people add an H because they want to make it an A-H, but I don't have that.
Yeah.
Just the third one I wasn't so clear on. I'm just going to go over that. In Sherotz HaKadosh Baruch Hu Vashrisham B'shorash Echa Torani Amiti Husha Philosophim Choshu Shoysa Nevua Dvar Tivi B'shetovo Li'odim Li'os Tovo Li'odim V'yoso Mucham V'sholim V'midos V'yame Amimonus Etzlam Shiyolin Odom Bilti Novi Vyashkem Novi. The third point of the Abarbanel, which I wasn't clear on, is that they had to hear the voice of God directly from Hashem. Lafuki, the argument of the philosophers, that it's impossible to go to sleep and wake up the next morning as a prophet. You have to prepare yourself and be shalem, bemidos, and so forth and so on. Hashem Yisroel wanted to demonstrate that's not true, that if a person is willing to commit himself, then he could become a Navi, and he heard, and the people of Israel heard the voice of Hashem Dor. Okay.
It's very appropriate that you use the expression of the writing, because the word "ones" and the usual words are not so common.
That's very appropriate. That what?
That you use
right. Talking. Because what? I'm sorry, I didn't catch the last few words that you said.
Because I don't know what you said, that Hashem, they are honest.
Right, the Maharalmi Prague into Ferris Yisroel. Right. I just, sometimes I get a little self, when you become like a little embarrassed, you become
self-conscious.
So self-conscious, right. I sometimes, you know, there are certain words in Lashon Kodesh right. that I'm not self-conscious about. Well, once I translate them, I get very self-conscious about them.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Because in Hebrew, ones has different connotations. Ones
right.
is also, as opposed to mazid or shoget, you have
right.
ones. In English, there's only one explanation.
I don't know. I'm not sure if I agree with you 100%, but you're right. You know, but you know what I'm saying? The word ones is a word in Kodesh. You know, I can always get away with that. But once I start translating it, you know, it's a little bit, you know, it's a little bit embarrassing. But I think that's what the Maharal is saying. But to say about Kaviyachal that he's committed and bound and he can't divorce us because we're on Usasa, because Kafalev, that requires, you know, analysis under a discussion of theology, you know, of the belief, you know, belief that God is infinite, yet he can bind himself. You know, this is very, this is the Maharalmi Pagan in his most profound level. Okay, Rabbi, so that's what we have.
I have something, I don't know.
Do we know why the light went off, by any chance?
It looks like it's a Klal basement.
Oh, the entire, we have some sort of Hafsakat Chashmal. Yes, I'm sorry.
If you would like to, for me to address or something for you. This is like the latest discovery of the Kriyat Yam Suf.
Yeah? Can you forward this to me?
Yeah. Do you have a WhatsApp?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so you have the same phone number on WhatsApp.
Yeah. Okay then? That would be cool. Okay.